Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Georgia picked up a big-time five-star on Saturday when five-star cornerback Keely Ringo made his, announcement official, had signed with Georgia during the early signing period and during the All-American Bowl on Saturday, announced to the world that's indeed what he was going to do. We'll talk more about that later on in our show today, and we'll have a lot more with that when Jeff Sintel joins us as a part of Tuesday's edition of Dog Nation Daily. Let me begin, though, instead with the kind of latest rumor mill when it comes to five-star running back Zach Evans. And I guess if you want to jump to the last page on this for a moment, for those who really want Evans in this class, who really hope that Evans ends up being a dog, it certainly seems like we're trending away from that right now. So if you don't hear anything else I say, I guess that's the big takeaway from all of this. But let's sort of see if we can figure out what we know for now, or what we can assume to be true on how all of this has kind of played out over the weekend, over the course of the last 48 hours. There are a couple of interesting tweets from a guy who covers the Texas Longhorns for 24/7 Sports, who apparently thought he had a little bit of a scoop on the Evans situation and then immediately corrected himself. Let me show you both these tweets from the weekend because I do think this is important. Bobby Burton from 24/7 Sports from the state of Texas says, "I'm told that running back Zach Evans signed with UGA in the early signing period, but the Dogs elected not to submit his letter of intent." That would have been interesting if true, because those things expire, I think, after like 14 days if you don't send them in. Then he pretty quickly corrected himself on Twitter. Let me see this again, please, if you don't mind. He says, "Correction, Georgia has submitted Evans paperwork to the NCAA per two 24/7 Sports sources. As a reminder, letters of intent bind a player to the school, not the school to the player, and he has signed with UGA." Now, for the most part, we've all kind of assumed that Georgia was the school that Evans signed with during the early period, but there had been some debate about, did that letter of intent get filed by Georgia? For the reasons I explained before, make that important and interesting. These things expire if you don't, and obviously if Georgia did put that on file, then the ball would be in Georgia's court if it wants to accept Evans as a player. Now, they could sort of release him from his letter of intent, but once Evans puts his signature on that letter of intent, then really his freedom and his opportunity to kind of search for another school or be a part of another program, once that letter of intent is signed and filed, if that was indeed the case, and the 24/7 Sports guy says that it was, then the ball would be in Georgia's court about what it wants to do with Evans, given the fact there was kind of a weird discipline issue hanging over his head. He didn't play in a state championship game, among other issues, during his senior year there at North Shore High School in Houston, Texas. This would seemingly be part of the reason why Evans showed so much contrition when he spoke on Thursday live on the ESPN2 broadcast of the Under Armour All-American game. This was supposed to be the night in which he announced his college pledge. We thought it was going to be Georgia, ended up not being anyone. And based on what he said that night with Deion Sanders sitting right beside him, seemingly the reason why this wasn't happening was not necessarily because of his choosing. This wasn't him, at least based on the way he talked on Thursday, not wanting to announce something. This was the school he was going to announce, apparently not willing to accept that, at least at that moment. The reason why you would be left to assume this is because Evans issued what amounted to a public apology. We played this for you at the time, but as a way of kind of getting the full picture of all this, let me give you a brief reminder of some of what Evans said on Thursday.
First and foremost, I want to apologize to all my college coaches for everything that's going on and what they're hearing. I'm really a good kid, and I wanted to, you know, come up here. I came in, I learned from some foreign professionals how to overcome adversity. I made some stupid decisions, and I'm ready to compete at the next level.
What's the next step for you in this process?
I'm ready to come in, be a learning prospect. I'm ready to come in and show them that I'm ready to listen. I'm coaching.
In that same interview, Deion Sanders, who's kind of an advocate for Evans and a guy that knows the Texas high school football scene well and also connected to Under Armour, said that he thought that Evans deserved a second chance. So you take that to believe that the school that he signed with, we believe it was Georgia, was trying to decide if it wanted to give Evans that second chance or not. So if you're following thus far, letter of intent apparently signed, filed by Georgia, Georgia then trying to decide, are they going to accept Evans as a part of this 2020 class? Well, according to some recent reporting from Jeff Sintel, and you can read this more at the forum at forum.dognation.com, apparently, according to Jeff, Georgia more likely than not thinking better of this the moment. Let me read you a couple of sentences here. This was from Jeff yesterday at the forum saying, "I'd expect the Evans news and talk to heat up tomorrow." That means today. on this Monday. Nobody can talk to him, meaning other schools, until he's been officially released from his letter of intent from Georgia. Jeff goes on to say, I'm not expecting him in the class at Georgia, especially as an early enrollee. So that's Jeff's intel on that point there. You can read more about this for absolutely for free at the forum at forum.dognation.com. So apparently Evans signs his letter of intent with Georgia. According to reports, that letter of intent was then filed. But now Georgia, according to Jeff Sintel, is possibly, likely, looking to release Evans from his letter of intent. And now it seems more likely than not that, I guess, based on the conjecture that's out there, that Evans won't be part of the 2020 class. Now, all of this, obviously, the caveat is this story has changed about a million times. We can be casual about this. We know that there's a chance that this story may change again as you head towards future days or whatever else, but as of right now, that's where things stand. Now, a lot of Georgia fans, I think, can make peace with the possibility that maybe Evans won't end up being a part of the class. Georgia's going to have a great class, whether Evans is a part of it or not. Georgia's going to be pretty deep at running back, even if it doesn't have Zach Evans next year. Georgia fans, for the most part, can kind of make peace with this. But the question you're left to answer, though, is, so what exactly went on here? What exactly was the story behind the story that led Georgia to want to sign Evans and then over the course of that process decide that now they no longer want Evans in this class, if that's indeed true? What happened here? And honestly, we may never know the full story on all of this, and that's kind of frustrating, I think, but the fact of the matter is, in a story like this with so many moving parts, with so many twists and turns, and, you know, this is not the kind of thing that we necessarily hear, histories on later on. There may just be a lot of this that we never hear the full story on, but there is one part of this, though, that I do think has to be added to the record. And when you're trying to find out what was the story behind the story, there is one part of this that I do think remains incredibly important. The other day, a close relative to Evans apparently put on Twitter about the subject of Zach Evans. This is C.J. Robinson on Twitter saying that he signed his letter of intent, but he's just not ready to leave right now. He's leaving in June. Now, like a lot of things with Evans, you're kind of left to know, okay, the way that's being said, is that the exact truth? Is it the total story? We don't necessarily know that either. But in terms of the full picture of what's going on here with Zach Evans, I think that aspect of this is really important. Today was supposed to be the day that Zach Evans was supposed to show up on the Georgia campus. Was he able to do so? Meaning, was he academically eligible? Was he willing to do so? If he was willing and able to be on campus today and Georgia decided they didn't want him to be there, then pretty clearly Zach Evans is not at Georgia for discipline issues. You can just, you know, very much read into that. But if somehow one of the answers, one of those two questions, was he able to be at Georgia today? Was he willing to be at Georgia today? If one of those two questions is no, then all of a sudden you get a much fuller picture of all of this. Pretty clearly, Georgia and a lot of schools had some concerns about Evans and kind of what caused him not to play in his state championship game at North Shore there in Houston. But beyond that, was he able to be on campus today? Was he willing to be on campus today? There are some questions about that. And ultimately, Evan's status, I think, and the full picture of why he's maybe not going to be a part of Georgia's class, a lot of that kind of stuff may go a long way towards determining what the real story on all of this is. Now, let me say one more thing about Evans, and we're going to move on. And who knows how much we'll talk about Evans, going forward beyond this. I know there's been some talk of, well, Georgia's maybe not doing enough, or Georgia fans maybe here are not doing enough to appreciate the players they have. In particular, another running back in the 2020 class, like, say, Kendall Milton. And Kendall Milton has been the picture-perfect story of a recruit, a guy who had a great senior year, a guy who made his pledge to Georgia, stayed steadfast to that pledge, even though he had a lot of big-time programs coming after him, and seemingly shows up at Georgia with a lot of steam behind him, and all expectations are he can have a really great freshman season. And I know sometimes it seems like Georgia fans or any college football fan kind of forget about the Kendall Miltons or the MJ Shermans or the whomever else is, and they kind of move their attention on to that next guy. And honestly, that's just human nature to a certain degree. However, the one thing we're not going to apologize for around here, we've been pretty clear throughout the entire time that as special as Milton is for Georgia potentially, and I do believe he has a potential degree of sort of special qualities that he brings to the running back room, We've been pretty clear on this show that we thought that Georgia, for its 2020 class, needed two running backs of the caliber of Kendall Milton. We just thought that was the case. That Georgia moves into a situation next year, having lost DeAndre Swift, he's going to the NFL, obviously Brian Harrion's a senior, that Georgia needed to replace both of those running back spots with elite players. And Kendall Milton himself has talked about this as well, that he wanted to be with a guy like Zach Evans. He mentioned him by name at one point in time, mentioned Tank Bigsby by name there as well. So this, to me, is not an example of Georgia overlooking Kendall Milton. Fans obviously appreciate him as much as they always have. But this is about being as deep as you need to be. And that's one of the reasons why I think that Georgia maintained Evans as a priority throughout this recruiting cycle, even though there was a lot of weirdness surrounding him for quite some time. So ultimately, this looks like it's going to end up with Evans somewhere else other than Georgia. UGA will move on with this. It's got an elite class, even though I think that it would have been nice to have five running backs of the caliber that Evans would have helped Georgia kind of round out its full form with. It's not like Georgia's exactly, you know, wanting in that department there either. This is the kind of thing that Georgia can regroup from and move on from. It has been kind of a weird process, and who knows? Maybe it's not done yet. The story behind the story, we may never get the full picture on all of this, but maybe this conversation gives you a little bit of clarity there in that regard. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by our friends at Pella Window and Door. Great to have you with us. First Monday in the studio for us in quite some time. No matter how you get to us today, video, 10 a.m., Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio, noon, Athens Sports Radio 963F. Going to be back for a full week here in the Classic City again. Of course, podcasts, wherever you find them. Just really glad to have you here on Dog Nation Daily today. And I really appreciate Pella Window and Door of Georgia making it all possible. You know, a lot of cold weather this time of year. It means you got the heat working overtime in your house. And if you've got old windows, old doors, a lot of that energy is escaping out of your house. And you don't want that to happen. Pella Window and Door of Georgia can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors, which means you keep the energy where it's supposed to be inside the house, and you have the potential to save money on your heating bills, your electric bills, everything else in between. Pella Window and Door of Georgia, also a nationally known company, but with a local branch right here in Georgia, which means you get great service to go along with the great resources that Pella Window and Door of Georgia can provide. And right now, they've got a great offer for you, 40% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months. But you've got to act right now. That deal expires very soon. So a couple different ways for you to get in touch. Really easy online. Simply go to PellaBranch.com. Website, once again, PellaBranch.com. Or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. Once again, 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. Coming up here in a couple of minutes, we will talk to John Stinchcomb. Have not heard from John since the Sugar Bowl. Want to react with him about a big Georgia win and kind of the good things that have happened for Georgia since then. We'll do all that with our buddy, the former UGA All-American, here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse. And I want to deal specifically with a piece of news that Georgia got on Saturday. We were here in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios ready to talk about Keely Ringo and his official announcement that he was joining Georgia's 2020 class, giving the Dogs another five-star name for this class. And while here, it became known that Richard LeCount, also on Twitter, let it be known that he was coming back for his senior season. I don't know if we have that to show to people or not, but LeCount making it be known, making it be official, coming back to Georgia for one more year. There you see it on, for those of you watching on video, year four, let's do it. We had a chance to talk to LeCount after the Sugar Bowl on Wednesday, and he was obviously in a great spirit about all of that. Didn't want to talk NFL announcements there at the time, but pretty clearly was energized by the way that Georgia finished the season, really by the way that Georgia started that 2020 calendar year. Two interceptions for him in the Sugar Bowl, kind of really living up to what LeCount's been this year, a little bit of a ball hawk safety. And now with them coming back for a final run here at Georgia, there are really two things that come to mind. One about the defense collectively, one about LeCount in particular. I want to deal with both these topics here for a moment. Pretty obviously, the Georgia defense in 2020, I think, sets up on paper to be the best of any of Smart's previous years at Georgia up to this point in time. This kind of sets up to be preseason talk of a defense. No defense for Georgia at the start of the season has looked better than this one will look heading into 2020, and LeCount giving that veteran presence, I think, is a big reason why in that regard. You got to have more than just talented freshmen. You got to have more than just sophomores ready to take that next step. You've got to be able to have someone that provides that J.R. Reed role for you. I think Richard LeCount, you know, can certainly do that. It was kind of funny to see Reed on Twitter actually mentioning something along those lines, that he's passing that baton over to LeCount, and now LeCount's going to fill the role that Reed has filled from a leadership standpoint for Georgia. Also interesting to see Louis Cine on Twitter saying that he was ready to kind of play side-by-side with LeCount next year. And when you see the way that Cine played in the Sugar Bowl, the idea of those two guys side-by-side together is certainly the kind of thing that you can have some fun times imagining what that'll look like more of in 2020. But then beyond that, there's also this. You know, for LeCount, who came in as a part of what I thought was, up to this point in time, the most pivotal recruiting class for Smart at Georgia, not the highest rank, but the most pivotal, that 2017 class, he was kind of the ringleader of that class. He's been a fan favorite throughout his Georgia career just for, you know, various reasons, and now he gets to come back for one final year to put a punctuation mark on what has been already a good run for him. When you think about real legitimate fan favorites here during the Smart era, and when we look back on, you know, after the 2020 season, kind of that early tenure for Smart, you know, who's mattered the most, who's meant the most, the idea of Richard LeCount being pretty high on that list with one more year to add accolades, I think there's a very good chance that ends up being true for him. So great news for LeCount personally, great news for UGA fans to have him back in the fold for one more big run. It's Dog Nation Daily. It's presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. We'll have more on Keely Ringo later on, more on an opening on the Georgia assistant coaching staff here. We'll celebrate the Georgia basketball win over Memphis. We've got a lot of ground to cover, but for now, let's get ready to talk to John Stinchcomb.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Look forward to getting a chance to say hello to John Stinchcomb right now, former UGA All-American, and always a great resource for us, just sharing his thoughts on UGA, what's going on, what's about to happen, and everything else in between. And John, I wanted to make sure we had you on today for sure, because I thought it was a great day for Georgia on Wednesday. After all the kind of weirdness leading up to the Sugar Bowl and the confusion about who was playing and those that were not playing, why they weren't playing, I think the one thing that Georgia needed to do was show a level of focus and determination with the guys that were there. And obviously we all remember how badly the 2019 calendar year got started for Georgia, and frankly what a sour taste the 2018 season ended with based on the lackluster effort against Texas. There was none of that to be found against Baylor. Baylor, a pretty good team, although, you know, certainly from a talent standpoint, maybe a little less so than Georgia, but by record and by stats, a pretty good team. And Georgia really had a good showing in New Orleans on Wednesday against the Bears. What did you think of the Sugar Bowl from your perspective?
For me, that might have been the most impressive win Georgia had all year. And I say that because of the players that were on the field. You didn't have a number of guys you counted on all year. And to, I think it was a testament to the development of the depth of Georgia's entire roster that you just beat a top 10 team, whether or not they're, you know, there's a reason why they're not playing in the college football playoffs, but that's a top 10 team you just beat. And you relied on your third, fourth, fifth, best running back. You had a different rotation in the secondary, and it seemed like they didn't miss a beat. And I, man, that was very impressive to me. I went into that game with some serious trepidation of how do you get the rhythm. I think what defined Georgia's defense throughout the season was their ability to not have a superstar and just play really good, sound fundamental football, and they were able to do that with a number of pieces they relied on throughout the season unavailable to them. So I thought it was a very impressive win and a great day for Georgia football and fans. It gave them something to be excited about for the 2020 season, which is always a good thing. You want to end on a high note, something that we weren't able to do last time we played in the Sugar Bowl.
I think one of the just honest truths about Georgia's current state within the college football landscape is this, is that when your expectations are national championship or bust, it's just kind of hard to make things be fun. And, you know, it's supposed to be entertainment, it's supposed to be enjoyable, but when the stakes are so high, and for Georgia, because of how good it has been, it has raised the level of stakes for every game that it plays in, it can just sort of be hard sometimes for things to be as fun as they're supposed to be. For fans, for coaches, for players, for everybody, it can be hard for this to be enjoyable. There was almost something because of the fact that this was a game where the, you know, the stakes have probably been lowered a little bit. Bowl games don't really mean what they used to, maybe. But lower stakes here, I think, actually made this end up being a little bit more of an enjoyable product. Now, I also really like George Pickens a lot, so the fact that he was showcased as much, especially in the first half as he was, that was really fun and really enjoyable for me. But it was just kind of nice to be able to watch Georgia football and just sort of appreciate it for what it is, a team that may be a little short of being as good as LSU is and a little short of being as good as, you know, Clemson is, team like that, maybe so, but still plenty good compared to a lot of the other so-called, you know, top national teams. It was just kind of nice to be able to appreciate Georgia in that regard and kind of, I guess, provide the reminder that while Georgia's still got some steps to take, it has certainly surpassed a large portion of this country in terms of the talent that it's amassed and the type of football it's capable of playing in a national showcase like that.
I couldn't agree more. I think that they have the talent to where the expectation's been raised, the bar has been raised, and that's a testament to what they've done as an entire program. The amount of talent in that locker room, on that roster, it's impressive. And I think there's probably, with the exception of maybe three or four schools in this country, there's a number of envious programs that look at Georgia and say, man, I wish we had what they have. And you're right. Once you raise that bar and the expectation and standards has been set, that anything less than competing for a national championship is a little bit of a letdown. Well, it relieved a lot of the pressure going into what used to be one of the biggest bowl games. And still is. I think it's just the fact that it's not a college football playoff game in the Sugar Bowl that lets you just enjoy the game for what it is. It's another opportunity, one last opportunity for fans to watch the Dogs play. And thankfully, they went out there and performed as expected. I think everyone across the country wanted and as long as they were engaged in that game, expected them to beat Baylor, and they did.
Yeah.
So that's a good thing for all of us.
So we're now at that point of the year where a lot of guys are making their intentions for next year known. DeAndre Swift, no surprise. He's going to join Isaiah Wilson, Andrew Thomas, on his way to the NFL. We've had a run of Georgia players say they're planning on coming back. Malik Herring has said so. Justin Schaefer has said so. Eric Stokes seemingly indicated online that he might be coming back, although I guess I'm going to wait and find out if that's indeed as true as it certainly appeared that it might be. But maybe the most prominent name of the guys who've said they're coming back right now is Richard LeCount, coming back for a run as a senior safety. John, it's obvious why this is so important because of the role that J.R. Reed played for Georgia, that veteran leadership, and Reed was really able to provide that before being a senior, but this year pretty pivotal there in that regard. To think that LeCount kind of steps into that role and Lewis Seen kind of steps in the role that LeCount has been in, which is kind of the young, dynamic safety, it's almost like a carbon copy of the safety dynamic that Georgia enjoyed this year with LeCount in kind of the elder statesman spot here now. If Georgia wants to be a great defense in 2020, I think it has a chance to be the best of the Kirby Smart era, but if it wants to be a great defense, it's got to have more than just talented young players. You got to have some veteran leaders too, and all of a sudden now Richard LeCount looks like that's the role that he intends to fill for Georgia. You know, obviously one day I think LeCount's going to make a lot of money in the NFL. I feel very, very selfishly thankful that he's decided he's going to forego that at least for right now. LeCount coming back to Georgia for one more go, I just view that as a very, very good piece of news for UGA.
There's so much about that decision that I love. I love it for Richard LeCount. I think his level of play has increased, especially this year over his sophomore season. And I appreciate it as a Georgia fan. I think it's obviously great for the program that they've got a playmaking leader who loves the game of football. I love watching Richard LeCount play because he plays with passion. And with as much young talent as that position group has, I think it's going to be really important to have someone that has been in the fire and can get the guys focused and understand that it's a long season and there is no room for let-ups. I think this year is another testament of that. He played against South Carolina, a lesser opponent, and for whatever reason, the focus wasn't there and the intensity wasn't there, and it goes and bites you in the end. So I think it's great. You know, I love this time of year personally because I get to start training offensive linemen as they prepare for the draft.
That's right.
And it's fun for me, but it's also it's sad because you see guys, you know, it's a dash for cash. And I don't want to list names. He wasn't a Georgia guy, but he was an underclassman last year, talented player, could really have served himself well to play another year of college football. There's so many folks that are missing out on this opportunity to develop as a player in college. If your aspirations are for the NFL, it's not a bad thing to be as good and a refined player as you can possibly be as you enter the NFL. It is not a developmental league. I think, you know, you look at some of the underclassmen that have left for the draft early from the University of Georgia alone in the past few years, and there are some who you can justify that decision, and others I think they got bad advice. I think they were listening to the wrong folks and feeling like, well, this has been my goal since I was fill-in-the-blank years old, and here's my opportunity. If you're a good player, keep getting better. Listen to those. There are scouts. There are programs. You get those reports that give you a draft grade. If you're not a first-rounder, maybe second-rounder, that means you still have an opportunity to get better. You can improve whatever it is, whatever you need to work on, because once you get there, it is a cutthroat business. There is only 53 spots on each team, and some of these guys think that, you know, I just want to get paid. Well, you're not going to get paid if you don't make that roster. So, you know, you got me up on my soapbox. You didn't even put me there. I put myself there.
No worries.
You know, it's this time of year where, guys are looking at it and going, you know, I want to get paid. Well, okay. But sometimes they dash out the door so quick that they're missing out on an opportunity to really set themselves up for success.
Let me do two things before we let you go. You know, DeAndre Swift told us he'd make a quick decision, and he did. Richard LeCount makes the opposite decision, but he also makes it quickly. Jake Fromm seemingly wants to take a little bit more time with his process. You were an offensive lineman, but you played for a long time in the NFL, and gosh knows you spent plenty of time around quarterbacks. I've asked you this before, but it seems more relevant to talk about it now because we're on the doorstep of one way or another Fromm making a decision. What do you think is going through his mind right now, and how is he going about his deliberations, if you had to guess?
Well, I think you're weighing all the information that you've gathered. I think you've at this point, the players have already received their draft grades and their analysis of their strengths and weaknesses. I'm sure he's spoken with his family. I'm sure he's spoken with his position coach and coaches at Georgia to understand what the opportunities are if he returns. And he's weighing those. This is just my speculation, but he's weighing all those various factors of, you know, does he feel like he has business left on the table at the University of Georgia? Everyone comes in with goals in mind, and would he be able to hit some of those? Could he play for a national championship if he comes back? Are there enough pieces around him to where he feels like, you know what, it would be worthwhile for me on reaching some of my collegiate goals to come back? Is it going to be better for me professionally? Would I have an opportunity to raise my game to another level? Or would it make more sense for me to go ahead and take this opportunity and move to the NFL? There's so many different factors that a smart player has running through their mind of why you should, and, you know, it's a list of pros and cons. There's advantages for leaving early, and there's advantages and positive things that you can look at for returning for one more year. So I'm sure he's got his inner circle close to him, looking through the pros and cons of coming back for another year or leaving early. But ultimately, it's his decision. And, you know, selfishly, I'd love to see him wear the red and black one more season, because I think he's a great player who didn't have his best year this year. But I also think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the game, and has received a lot of hate this year, and can prove people wrong either way, either whether he goes to the NFL and has a successful career, which I think he will, or returns one more year and you surround him with a little more talent, especially in the wide receiver room, and he impresses folks and everybody starts singing his praises again and jumps back on the Jake Fromm bandwagon. So there's a lot racing through his mind, I have no doubt.
Let me bring you in on a hot topic to close out our conversation that's been going on for a few days, and I'm curious, as a guy who spent a lot of time in locker rooms, how you feel about this. Five-star running back Zach Evans. There's been some rumors and some rumblings that he signed with Georgia and that Georgia was then trying to decide if it wanted to accept Evans as part of the 2020 class because of some whispered allegations of what may have happened to him at the end of his high school career to go along with maybe a number of other things, but in particular the fact that he did not play for his team in its state championship game because of what certainly seems from afar to have been a discipline issue. Now, John, to be very clear, there is nothing about Evans that's been publicly reported that would keep me from wanting to at least take a flyer on him at Georgia, because I'm of the belief that if you bring in a guy and he acts like a knucklehead, it's just not that hard to get rid of him. We've kind of seen that in college football before. However, I also don't have to deal with the locker room dynamic over and over again. It's also, I guess, fair to point out with Evans, it's not entirely clear if he's academically eligible to be at Georgia as an early enrollee, which is seemingly what he was supposed to be. But putting that aside for a moment, as a guy that has spent time in a lot of locker rooms and understands the way that the chemistry of a team has to work and the way that everybody's going to be kind of pulling in the same direction, how much of a risk is it for Georgia to potentially bring in a guy, not just this particular player, but any player who seemingly has a little bit of red flag, you know, going back to some discipline stuff from a high school situation? How concerned should Georgia be about that? Kirby Smart in particular, who's the one that has to make a decision like that on a situation like this?
I'm going to speak in generalities because I don't know Zach Evans' situation. I don't know what all he's facing. I have read some of the posts about it and speculation, but I can't speak to, I don't feel comfortable speaking to a situation that I don't have the information on.
Fair.
What I do know is locker room chemistry and culture, and it very much matters. I think I've witnessed both sides of it where, you know, you're always going to have some guys that don't make the best decisions. And for a coach, it's figuring out that right chemistry of it. And, you know, it's the 10-10-80 rule. You're going to have 10 guys that are going to always excel and do great things, and you got 10 guys or 10% of your guys, they're going to make, you know, not the great decisions, but you know, they're probably good players, and you need them around. And then you have the 80%, the middle part of your crowd that's willing or is more susceptible to that influence. And if that ratio gets off a little bit, if you get a little too many rotten apples in the bunch, then it becomes a real problem. And I've witnessed that firsthand, and I've also witnessed the purge that occurs, and you get really good, strong leadership, and you create a culture where it can tolerate a couple guys that probably haven't made the best decisions and in the wrong environment would not excel. So if you've created a healthy environment where you've got strong leaders and you've got a good culture pre-existent, then I think you can take chances on guys when they come in, but it can only be a select few because once that ratio, like I said, once that ratio gets out of kilter, it's really tough to rebuild a broken culture, a toxic culture. So you have to figure out and know where's that balance. How many of those guys can we have in one room and it still be a healthy environment? You can have some. You know what I mean? You really can. You can have some guys that, you know, come with a little bit more question marks and red flags if do feel really good about the culture and locker room they're walking into.
No, I think that's really well said, John, and the kind of wisdom we've come to expect from you. We appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door today. We'll look forward to hearing from you soon, and happy 2020. Thanks so much for your time, and it's a pleasure chatting with you.
Well, I think the Dogs are off to a great start, and I also would like to congratulate Coach Crean and the basketball team on a huge win against Memphis. That was really exciting to see, and it's nice to see Georgia basketball starting to make some ripples.
I could get used to a little more of that, John, couldn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking at the schedule and calendar the other day to see when can I get my family over there and catch a couple games in Steg. So that's, it's exciting to have something to look forward to this time of year going on athletic-wise. You know, we go support the Gym Dogs, but,
sure,
man, it'd be nice to watch some really good basketball played in Athens as well.
When you were at Georgia, the basketball team was really good and really fun to watch. Did you go to a lot of those games back then? Were you a basketball fan while being a football player on campus?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Terrence Edwards he would actually try to attempt to be a basketball player, and I think if you ask him to this day, he still claims to be a better basketball player than a football player. And, you know, we had the Hayes brothers, Jarvis and Jonas, and it was some good basketball then, so it's exciting to see that Coach Crean has done some really neat things and brought in some players and brought some energy back to the program, and It's a good time for us, and obviously that on the back of a really big win.
Yes, no doubt. Saturday was a lot of fun. John, we'll talk to you soon, all right?
All right, appreciate it, guys. Talk to
you. Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
So I think incredible stuff from John Stinchcomb. First of all, it's just fun to hear him reacting to the basketball win. We'll talk more about that later on, but it's kind of cool to see John having a good time with that. I do want to follow up on what he said about not the Evans situation, because it's important to know that he's not speaking specifically about Evans, but speaking about how chemistry impacts a locker room. I think that's really, really important. Admittedly, when it comes to a really talented player, like 99 times out of 100, I'm going to be willing to take the flyer because I want the talent, right? I mean, I just, you know, almost everyone's going to be that way. And it's worth pointing out that if Georgia decides it's not wanting to be in the Zach Evans business, there's going to be multiple SEC teams who'll be lining up for their shot. That's just kind of the way this goes. However, I'm also willing to acknowledge is that when I think about these things, I do think about them more from kind of like a fantasy football perspective of, hey, just collect this kind of talent and get this wide receiver and that running back and that quarterback and that whatever, whatever, whatever. But in real life, you don't construct rosters like fantasy football teams. You construct rosters of human beings, and you have to think about how they interact with each other and how they get along with each other. And as John said, you've got a ratio that you've got to keep in mind of, is your locker room strong enough to tolerate this? And only the coaches themselves kind of understand that. So I do respect all of that part of it, that while I have the freedom to kind of only look at this from the standpoint of the talent and, you know, what could it bring to Georgia and how quickly could you move on from the situation if it's not quite working out? If you're a coach, you do have more considerations about it. You've got the human element you got to think of. That's one of the reasons why we like having John on the program when it comes to that. I'll also say this. I'm sure many of you are aware of kind of the online conjecture that if Evans ends up somewhere else, it may be a school like Texas A&M. If you're a UGA fan lamenting the fact that he might not come to Georgia, there's really no better place for him to be. You might as well play on the moon if you're going to play at Texas A&M, because Georgia did play the Aggies this year, but they're not scheduled to play again, I think, for 40, 50 years from now, something like that. Of course, I'm joking, but it seems about that long. Obviously, A&M, if I had to guess, is not going to win the SEC West anytime soon. So if you wanted to worry about not ever having to play Zach Evans, Texas A&M might be a pretty good place for him to go, all things being equal. Let's go cruise around the SEC right now, courtesy of our friends at Royal Caribbean. And, you know, what a great time it is to take a Royal Caribbean cruise here as we start 2020. And one of the main things that makes it so much fun is the stuff going on the ship. I'm talking about the dazzling full-scale entertainment that's available on these Royal Caribbean cruises, Broadway-type shows, Tony Award-winning Broadway shows in many cases, ice skating, dive shows, performance drones, original productions, and on the Oasis-class ships, you can get those aqua theater shows. unbelievable bars and night spots and sports bars and everything else. What goes on the ship during a Royal Caribbean cruise is one of the things that makes it so much fun. And so my advice to you would be to book the vacation. I know you need one. Let's go ahead and book that vacation right now. A couple different ways for you to do so. You can contact your own travel advisor. But let me also suggest here the Cruise and Vacation Authority. The Cruise and Vacation Authority, you can reach out to them at 800-326-4971. That's 800-326-4971. When you get in touch with them, do me a favor. Let them know you heard about them on Dog Nation Daily. That'll get you in touch with the Cruise and Vacation Authority, and you'll be on your way for a vacation after that, which I know you need here as we start 2020. All right, on this Monday, there is big news coming to Tuatunga-Vailoa. Noon Eastern time, I believe, is the right time on this. So by the time many of you hear this show on radio or podcast, this will be old news to you, but it's new to us right now. Tuatunga-Vailoa is going to say if he's coming back to Alabama for a senior season or if he's going to the NFL. Now, I've been very clear on this. There have been some rumors and some rumblings that he might come back to Alabama. If he does, I think that's a disastrous situation for him, just given the fact that he's dealt with injuries the last 2 years. I think if you can be a top 15 pick, that seems to be the conjecture right now, that's what Tuatunga-Vailoa would be drafted if he moved on to the NFL. If you can be a top 15 pick, you should. And frankly, if he comes back to Alabama, even though it'd be good news for Crimson Tide fans, I believe this is a bad look for Alabama. It comes across as if they are exploiting naivete for a guy like that to turn down eight-figure money for any reason to come back to Alabama. And I think that Nick Saban will be justifiably criticized for it if this is the decision Tuatunga-Vailoa makes. And Alabama can say all it wants about the fact they've been hands-off and let Tuatunga-Vailoa make the decision they want to make, Tua and his family here. But the bottom line is, there will be room to criticize Alabama if Tua does not leave and go to the NFL. And I'll be one of the first to do it there in that regard. People ought to be free to make the choice they want to make. But the fact of the matter is, you are putting the money that could change your family for generations at risk for coming to Alabama for a final season. And somebody ought to be wise enough to step in and tell Tua that and make sure he understands that if that hasn't happened already. But we'll find out at noon today, Eastern time, what's going to go down with that. A couple other stories here. So it's been weird following the Mississippi State coaching search. They did move on for Joe Moorhead. Moorhead was never very popular to begin with. A lot of kind of rumors about the preparation for Mississippi State for its bowl game, what went on there during practice. Obviously, they had a pretty poor performance in losing to Louisville. And in the aftermath of moving on from Moorhead, they've had some disappointment. Billy Napier, who I believe is Louisiana team's playing a bowl game today, I think it's the final FBS game before the national championship game. Napier has seemingly, according to some reports, I think Brett McMurphy had this first, withdrawn his name from consideration for that Mississippi State job. And so all of a sudden now you start looking at some of these other names that are out there. There has been some rumors lately that a guy like Todd Grantham may be more involved with this. Grantham spent some time as Mississippi State defensive coordinator. Now at Florida, obviously, is the D.C. I love coaching rumor season. It's my favorite time of the college football year, really, in many ways. It's just fun. This is a fun rumor that Florida may have to hold on to its defensive coordinator and keep him from becoming head coach at Mississippi State. He's not the only name in consideration. My ultimate number one wish of Hugh Freeze being involved here, that doesn't seem like it's going to happen. But this Mississippi State coaching search could get fun before it's done. One more point to get to. Speaking of Florida, they did get some good news over the weekend as Lorenzo Lingard, a former five-star running back played most recently in Miami, hurt his knee. Like I said, this is a five-star back from the class of 2018, hurt his knee in the 2018 season, did not play much this year at all, but this is a pretty big get for Florida. And, you know, this is one of those things where even though I'm a Gator hater, I can be somewhat objective on this. I do think Florida's done a pretty good job of working the transfer market. Van Jefferson, a receiver, comes to mind here. There are other names that you can mention of for a school that doesn't recruit high school players very well. You got to find talent somewhere. And Florida admittedly has done a pretty good job with its transfer work. I don't know how good Lingard is coming off the knee injury. He may still be very good, but in terms of the player addition of a transfer like this, I think you got to give Florida a little bit of credit for that. We'll make that. Cruising around the SEC, courtesy of Royal Caribbean. All right, a couple Georgia stories I want to deal with here for a minute on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door. Georgia is now down an assistant coach as Scott Fountain is moving on to coordinate special teams for Sam Pittman there at Arkansas. This happened live while we were doing the Keely Ringo show on Saturday, Fountain moving on to be a part of that. And I know the way that most Georgia fans are going to kind of take this and what most Georgia fans are going to kind of do with this, it immediately in their minds open up that spot for Georgia to upgrade its offensive coaching staff, to bring in somebody else to kind of go along with what we presume is going to be James Coley back in 2020 and kind of spice things up offensively, much the same way that Joe Brady did that for LSU this past year. And admittedly, I kind of think about it in the same kind of regards. However, as excited as Georgia fans should get about that and will get about that, probably important not to completely disregard the role that Fountain played for Georgia. Now, for the most part, special team stuff, I don't care about as much as I used to. Back when this was an issue for Richt, I used to always want to see Georgia kind of add that special teams coordinator. For the most part now, I'm kind of fine with however you want to divide those responsibilities up. I think Fountain's real value to Georgia, though, was the fact that he was an area recruiter for a good portion of Florida. A lot of these big recruiting wins that Georgia had in the state of Florida, you know, I think the Fountain played a role in some of that. So I think that he had a significant contribution to Georgia, even though him moving on to Arkansas gives fans a chance to do what they want to do, which is upgrade the offensive coaching staff, and maybe indeed that might happen. It's not as if Fountain had no value to UGA. He was a pretty important recruiter for the state of Florida for UGA. So on his way out to Arkansas, certainly he deserves a bit of a measure of thanks for some of his contributions to the 2020 class in particular. Sunshine State was good to Georgia in this class, and Fountain played a big role in some of that. But obviously, it's going to be tough to kind of talk about what happens next, because we don't necessarily know what kind of coach George is looking to hire. Most of us will presume it will be an offensive guy, you know, someone that can be passing game coordinator, which I believe Brady's title at LSU is, or true classic quarterbacks coach, giving Coley a chance to be just the offensive coordinator, or maybe some other, you know, option that I'm not even, you know, considering right now. So it's going to be kind of hard to talk about the rumor mill on all this kind of stuff, because we don't know specifically what title of coach that Georgia's looking to hire. But one way or another, for UGA fans who wanted to see a coaching change usher in improved offense for 2020, Fountain's departure gives that now a chance to happen. We'll follow that and see where it goes. Fun to hear John Stinchcomb a moment ago also give credit to Tom Crean, the Georgia basketball team, for its win at Memphis on Saturday. Number 9 team in the country. First road win against a top 10 foe for Georgia in a long time. Did I hear this right? Like 16 years, something like that. It's been since Georgia's won a top 10 game like this on the road. It's also a pretty nice improvement for Georgia in comparison to its other really bad road performance earlier this year, going to Tempe against Arizona State and got beat up pretty bad there in that game. So nice to see Georgia get this win. Could not come at a better time with SEC play starting this week. Kentucky on Tuesday, Auburn after that. It's a tough start for Georgia's SEC play, but it does so on a high note, getting a big win against Memphis. So congratulations to the UGA basketball team for that. And then one more story. As I said before, we'll end up doing a lot more on this tomorrow just because Jeff Sintel will be with us as he typically is on Tuesdays. Georgia does add five-star cornerback Keely Ringo into the mix, and that was a great addition. You know, even though it doesn't come across as the world's biggest surprise, a lot of Georgia fans had considered Ringo to be a part of this class, even though he didn't officially proclaim himself as of that until Saturday. When you look at what's going to win you national championships in the modern age with Alabama having the kind of receivers it has, with LSU having the kind of receivers it has, no one's recruited receivers better than Ohio State probably has. Clemson's still top-notch there in that regard. You got to have the kind of cornerbacks that can battle those guys, and Ringo may be as good at that as anyone is. Georgia's recruited defensive backs very well. I don't know that there's any prospect on paper better than the way that Ringo looks right now, so big news for Georgia. Also good news, 1,164 days. That's how long it's been since those lousy, stinking Gators have beaten UGA. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.